Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com. accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast. And today, I would like to start out by reminding you of all the great goodies that you're missing out if you have not been to wealthformula.com, which is the website and home base of this podcast. And that is a place where you can get all sorts of free stuff. And who doesn't like free stuff? We're talking about free books and free downloads of all kinds. You can also get on the investor club list if you are an accredited investor and make sure that you start actually taking some action on these things that we talk about on the show rather than just sitting alone on the sideline with some lazy money in your lap. Also, I want to remind you that there is a course. So, you know, we have this community called Wealth Formula Network, and we started this thing out with a course, right? And the course is called Your Roadmap to Real Wealth. And it is a course that gives you the foundations, the basics of personal finance that you did not get in school, probably, unless you were an accounting student or you had some special education that none of the rest of us people seem to have. Anyway, there's a ton of information on there with some high-powered attorneys and tax people like Kevin Day and Tom Wheelwright and Ken McElroy, real estate guru himself, Dean Graziosi, et cetera. Check that all out at wealthformularoadmap.com. Now, that's only the beginning, though, because once you sign that up, that's the foundation, right? Then you have got the community of Wealth Formula Network, which has an active Facebook community. It also has a biweekly mastermind call, which is a big favorite with people who are, who are members, and also an extra portal on which we post various content, such as recorded phone calls, for example. Anyway, check it all out again at wealthformularoadmap.com. Would love to have you, and especially if you're one of those people at the Scottsdale event and got a lot out of it, this is exactly where you will find the same kind of thing on a weekly basis. Don't make it just a, biannual, whenever we do meetups kind of thing. So anyways, let's start. Let's talk a little bit about today's show. When you're in this world of the podcast, the alternative podcast world, and I think I'm part of that alternative investment podcasts, right? You hear a lot of people talking about real estate, and I don't consider myself just a real estate podcast. I'm in a personal finance podcast, really, for people who've got a little bit of money. We're not talking about getting out of, cubicles, et cetera, stuff like that. We are here talking about investing. And then once in a while, though, I hear on these shows, I'll hear people who are talking about great investments, but they're really talking about something different, right? I mean, they're talking about investments that are yielding 20% or more. And on the surface, they sound great. In fact, the yield part might actually be real. However, we're so ingrained in this investment world that we fail to see the obvious distinction that may not be so obviously disclosed by people who are selling a product. You see, there is a big difference between investing, right, and buying or starting a business. That's a big difference. A business is inherently riskier than investing in something like multifamily real estate or self-storage, things like, you know, that are really just, you know, kind of slow burn wealth creation type things. Now, why is that? Well, it's because businesses tend to have shorter lifespans to them and often get phased out over time by technology, or they just flat out fail. And I've got a couple of those failures under my belt, so I can tell you that that is the case. I had one that lasted 10 years, I had another that lasted 3 or 4 years, and they did well while they existed, and then their time came up and they, you know, rest in peace, right? But it's not just the little guys like me. I mean, listen, big businesses get phased out all the time. You know, technology, the internet is phased out a lot of businesses. Remember just, you know, literally 15, 20 years ago, Blockbusters, right? I mean, shoot, how many Blockbusters you see around anymore? How about Sears, right? Sears was around for a while. And then for some reason, that catalog just stopped coming in the mail. And I think it might have had something to do with the likes of Amazon. And in the meantime, at the same time, you take a drive around Chicago or Boston. You know, I was in Chicago for a long time. I was there in the 90s, and I've gone back recently, and those same buildings are still there. People are still living there, same place that I lived. And you look around and you realize that multifamily, these buildings, I mean, in Chicago, or like in Boston or any of these older cities in New York, buildings that are over 100 years old are a dime a dozen. They are everywhere. See, the thing is, needing a place to live seems like a problem we can't solve with technology quite yet. Anyway, so when someone comes on a podcast and makes a comparison or makes some sort of claim about high yields and with investing in something, but they're really talking about a business, starting a business or buying a business, they're not being completely honest. You see, for all the reasons we discussed earlier, businesses are inherently riskier to own than assets like multifamily real estate or self-storage. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I made all of my initial money starting businesses, not by, you know, just buying real estate and, you know, with no money in my hands. I mean, you can't buy real estate if you don't have any money. Like Robert Kiyosaki says, my businesses buy my real estate. And that is mostly true still. And the idea is therefore to take this explosive earnings that you get with a business, you may get really high returns. I mean, if you start a business, you could be getting 100% or more returns cash on cash in a year. And you take those explosive earnings and then you lock them into slow burning stable assets that create long-term wealth. And, you know, that is a very important concept that a lot of entrepreneurs don't understand either. You know, the entrepreneur's trap, you know, and I'm an entrepreneur, is to take that money and dump all of it back into his or her business. Now, I've been actually guilty of that before early on, where I a disproportionate amount of money that was being made from a business I own was going into, you know, growing a business bigger and starting other offices, et cetera. And I got burned. And knowing what I know now, it pains me to see others do that. So if you're out there and you're dumping all of your money back in your business to grow the same business and aren't taking anything out to invest in other stuff, be forewarned. I'm telling you right now, it's a mistake I've learned the hard way. On the other hand, if you've never owned a business, it might be worth something, you know, to give a shot. I mean, starting a business from scratch is a little harder and not everybody has the DNA for that. But, you know, you can buy businesses that are already working and already have a track record of making money. Just remember, though, that, you know, buying businesses can be risky too. So, you know, if you're super conservative, don't bother. You know, the risk is baked in to the yield, right? That's why instead of getting 8 or 9 or 10% like you might with leveraged real estate, if you're buying a small business, you should be looking at getting at least 30-40% cash on cash returns. I mean, for the size of business that, you know, us, we can afford. And we're not talking about, you know, Warren Buffett acquiring, you know, a railroad or something like that. But beyond the higher returns, you should also have a number of tax advantages that come with owning a business that you should consider as well. Anyway, I think it's worth considering. But if you are one of those people tempted by the idea of getting into business ownership, but don't really want to bet the farm on it, I think you're going to like this week's Wealth Formula podcast, because it is it's from a guy. The discussion is with a guy from a business called Empire Flippers, which is essentially a broker for online businesses. Now, remember, one of the big problems and barrier to entry and risk, frankly, to brick and mortar business is expense and overhead. But online businesses can have, you know, fairly low expense to get into, and, you know, can have pretty much minimal to zero overhead. And at the same time, if you do it right, they can have substantial upside. Anyway, that should be enough to pique your interest in this week's show, which we will have right after these messages.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast is Greg Elfrink from Empire Flippers. Empire Flippers has helped buy and sell over $50 million in online businesses. It's an Inc. 5000 company and the number one curated marketplace for buying and selling established profitable online businesses. Greg, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's kind of start out with, you know, why an investor should consider buying an online business, particularly if this is not really their world. Why would you do something like that?
Yeah, so I would make the argument that, you know, commercial real estate or stocks wasn't initially your world either, right? When you start off in your investment career, as to why you might want to do online investments, like an online business versus say another stock investment or another real estate investment, is really the ROI potential. So if you look at let's say a real estate rental at $100,000, just make everything easy, that you're putting like 20% down on it. When it's all said and done, that $100,000 investment might be cash flowing you like $600 to $800 per month. And that's before you start taking like the taxes out, possibly a HOA, like homeowner association out, the money you have to save for a rainy day when you eventually will have to fix the roof, all that kind of stuff. And now you're looking at a cash flow of maybe $300, right? Of actual monthly net profit. If you took that same $100,000 and you invested it in say a content website that's fairly hands-off, that right now with the way multiples are, that would be about $4,000 to $5,000 of cash flow per month with no roof, with no tenants, with no drywall you need to fix or anything like that. And yet it has the same ability that real estate attracts so many of us to, in that you can really control the investment. So unlike stocks, where you invest in a stock market or a stock, you know, company or whatever, you don't really control the destiny of that stock, of that investment. Like you could, if you had a ton of money, you might be able to fluctuate the value of it. But that's not most of us. And when you buy an online business, you really do control every single aspect of it to a much higher degree than any other investment, and with a higher return. Now it is more volatile, of course, but the higher return is goes with the higher risk, right?
No question about it. And you know, we were talking about this offline a little bit. I am a little bit part of this world already, and I would agree with a lot of the things that you're saying right there. Let's talk specifically about the different kinds of businesses that you broker, because just, you know, online businesses are about as diverse as offline businesses.
That's so true enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So give us sort of the, you know, 1,000-foot summary or review.
Yeah. So not to be promotional or by any means, but if your audience wants a much more in detail answer to that question, I actually wrote a ebook on that subject. It's called The 13 Most Popular Online Business Models, and it covers all the different models that we sell. It's also, it's like available on Amazon. You can just go to our blog. There's a blog series on it. But to answer your question, the short answer is I boil it down to like three different types of businesses, or I guess four. So there's content businesses, and those are like your typical blog. So it could be about anything, you know, kitchen appliances, homework, home improvement, you know, whatever. And they typically make money from the search traffic that's coming in on certain keywords. They usually have display ads, or they're monetizing through what is called affiliate marketing. So the most famous affiliate program, of course, is Amazon.com. Sure. Say it was a kitchen appliance thing, and they had a guide on the best blenders for juicing or whatever. Then links to that blender on Amazon. Whatever they buy during that 24-hour period, Amazon gives them a commission. So that's the basics of content sites. They're almost like magazines, like online magazines one way to look at it. Then there's e-commerce stores, and e-commerce is just like your typical offline business where you, or brick and mortar, selling whatever physical good usually that you want, only it's the online version of that. So within that, e-commerce has drop shipping, which is another form of e-commerce where you're basically using a middleman to source the product so you don't have to invest large amounts in inventory. But then there's the other really popular subset of e-commerce, which is Amazon FBA. And that's exactly what it sounds like. You source a product from, you know, either a factory in America or China or wherever, and then you put that product inside of Amazon's warehouse, and they'll actually put your product as a product listing on Amazon.com. And that's gotten a lot of attention the last 2 years or so. The final one, the final big differentiator business is software. So software as a service, typically, or SaaS as it's commonly called. And SaaS is basically where someone pays a monthly membership to use your software. So the example that almost everyone's familiar with is Netflix. So Netflix is technically a software as a service. The service that you're renting for $10 a month is their streaming service, right? Most SaaS businesses are B2B. Netflix is just an easy example for me to call out.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that when you're talking about some of these things that occurs to me as someone who kind of, you know, like I said, I am in this world, so I get it. But when you talk about blogs and affiliate marketing, or you talk about, you know, drop shipping, or specifically software, some of these things actually require a fair amount of work, right? I mean, you're going to, if you buy a blog, you're not going to just, you know, leave, you know, not write anything for a year. You know, you're going to have to write something. With drop, you know, even with software, especially, you're going to be probably
software is probably the more intensive of them all. Yeah,
right. So are there opportunities for people who are purely, you know, are, you know, very close to, you know, passive, who are not necessarily that technical?
Absolutely. So one thing that we've seen, especially in the last, I'd say, year, is these investment funds starting to get created, where these people, they'll raise money. And often the person raising the money is also the person that's good at making the deal happen in terms of acquiring the business. But they'll raise money from investors, and then they'll also employ what we call the operator that operates the actual business. So they didn't pay the investor a dividend. Now, those aren't so commonplace where I can just tell you where to go to, you know, sign up for that. But if you are an investor listening to this and you're like, hey, I really want that aggressive ROI, but I don't necessarily want to do the work and I'm kind of afraid that I can't do the work. What I would tell you to initially start off with is probably a content site, because those are usually pretty hands-off once they get going. Like all the work is front-loaded on most of those content sites to get initially ranked in Google. And once you're ranked, you just stay there and you get traffic until an algorithm update comes or a competitor comes. But usually you're pretty solid for at least a few months. And you can kind of get your feet wet easier that way into the online business world. The other thing I would really suggest for investors, if you have the capital and if you have a skill set, say managing people or delegation, then you are already like 99% more skilled than the average internet business buyer. And that skill set will like you might have to take a little bit of the ROI off the table to hire someone to operate that business. But the skill set of delegation is one of the most powerful skill sets when it comes to making money with online business, in my personal opinion. Right. So that's some like mindset shift that might be help some investors.
When I think of risk for these kinds of things, let me give you an example. For in one of my businesses in Chicago had it's an offline business. It's a real business, but so much of the traffic over the last decade was driven by the fact that we were ranked number one for a keyword. I mean, our search engine optimization, we literally were number one, major keywords for a decade through all the algorithm changes, et cetera.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. The SEO guy is, you know,
hope he got a good bonus.
He's my savior, man. He's the best. And then the most recent update that we had, it was called Medicus, and it affected medical sites in particular. Mm-hmm. We got hammered out of nowhere. And so for a decade, we were number one, absolutely killing it in terms of organic traffic, which is obviously super cheap, right? It's free. Yeah. And then we went from there to all of a sudden paying for every bit of our traffic. So that is obviously one of the big risks that you're going to run into, right? I mean, would you consider that the biggest risk when it comes to any site in particular that would require traffic?
So that's a really good question. It really depends on the business because every business is a bit different. The first thing I would say about risk, so if you compare it to apples, like real estate or stocks, even if you buy a site and it's only profitable or 80% of the profit falls away in like 6 to 7 months, the chances of what you're making even after that cliff is probably still more than the other investment all in. So like you have a lot more room for failure in that case. As far as risk goes with the search traffic example, you bring up a really solid point. Most online businesses, at least that we see on the sales side, they typically have what we call a critical point of failure. And that critical point of failure changes based off the business model. So on a content site, is usually SEO, because you don't control Google, right? If they do an algorithm update, you could be screwed, or maybe you're the one who didn't get screwed and suddenly you're just skyrocketing through, right? But either way, you don't control it. With Amazon FBA, the critical point of failure is Amazon, because Amazon could at any time take away the program or change the rules and suddenly your account's banned, you know, all that kind of stuff. So most online businesses that we sell, that we see, typically have these critical points of failure, but that doesn't mean they can't be mitigated. So in the SEO example, say I was buying a content site and it's good branding, people are coming back to the site. The first thing I would do is start building an email list. So then I can start having omni-channel, right? Now I'm not relying as much on Google. Google is still my prime breadwinner, but I'm mitigating that by collecting an email list. Maybe I start doing some Pinterest marketing on there as well, which is also really powerful and organic, similar to Google. It's like almost like the Google of social media in a sense, if you're in a visual niche. So that was another way you can mitigate that. So as a buyer, you always want to look at that risk and realize like, this is a real risk. Am I willing to take that risk? And is there steps that I can take to help mitigate that risk? So that's my answer there.
No question. And I think to the extent that you've acknowledged that these are highly volatile businesses. And so what
you also talked about is the advantage, the because of that, you're getting higher, you tend to get higher cash on cash returns early on. In the example that you used, for example, I think you were saying that, you know, if you put $20,000 into something, you might be getting, you know, $4,000 a month back.
$100,000, back on that. Like, that would be an awesome multiple.
You know, it's interesting though, because I remember looking at sites some time ago, you know, and depending on what it was, I mean, or the size of the site, I mean, some of the sites would be worth, you would pay like, you know, 1 year profits. I mean, that would be the site. So that's a cash on cash of, basically 100% as long as nothing change, so to speak.
Right.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about valuation specifically? When it comes to these things, are you, and I'm sure it depends on the size of the site, the aging of the site, the type of, you know, business that it's in. Tell us about what goes into the valuation of all of that.
Yeah, good question. So we actually have an entire team set up to value these businesses. We call it vetting. And most of the businesses that come to sell with us, we don't actually end up listing on the marketplace. I think we're still rejecting around 2/3 of businesses that come to us. So any business you see on the marketplace has passed our vetting checks. And what that means is that it's legitimately making money. It's legitimate traffic. What the seller is saying is true to the best of our ability. But in terms of how we actually value that business, there's a lot that goes into it. But some of the main factors is age, like you mentioned. How old has it been? And what's the track record of that profitability? How does that profitability look like on a year-over-year basis? Now, some online businesses are so new that you can't really do year-over-year. They might have 16 months, but they don't have 24, right? So that's one reason why we price using a monthly window. So we usually try to do a 12-month window. But if they do have that year-over-year data, that also... one, they're probably going to get a better valuation because they have more data. And two, it lets us look, is this profit trending upwards? Is it trending downwards? Is it, you know, steady? Is it seasonal? All that kind of stuff. So we look into that. We also look at the backlink profile, if it's an SEO site. If it's a commerce store, we also look at how many SKUs they have. So a SKU is the actual product that the store is selling. It's like shorthand jargon in sure. e-commerce world. So if they have just one SKU, one product, and you know that business would be worth $400,000 or $600,000, we're much less likely to give them that $400,000 or $600,000, even if everything else checks out, because that's one product, right? That point of failure has increased dramatically. Now, if that was spread out over 8 products, then okay, if one product falls out of favor, but the other 7 products are still doing well, and no one product makes up over like 50% of the revenue, then this is a more stable business, more attractive to a buyer too. So that's things like that will go into effect as well. There are a few other like softer points, like, you know, do they have good documentation, like of their systems, of their standard operating procedures? Do they have a team in place? Does that team come over with the new owner, or do they have to train like a right. new group of people? So there's a bunch of different factors, but net profit and the history are the two major factors.
Talk a little bit about the size of businesses and the cost of businesses that you're typically dealing with. Cause I presume there's not a lot of, you know, you talked about real estate. Obviously one of the big advantages is that we can use the bank for the majority of the cost. Here, presumably you're going to be paying out of pocket, or maybe you have some kind of, you know, seller financing or whatever, but, what kind of cost are we talking about typically for websites that you guys broker in particular?
Yeah. So our websites really have a really big range. So we sell sites as little as $20,000, and all the way up to, we've sold one site just recently for $3 million. So that's a huge range. So it kind of meets everyone's criteria a bit. In terms of like average deal price, if you look at all the businesses that we sell on average right now, the average price is about $115,000, or maybe it's $121,000 now. It's been a bit since I looked at the number, but that's the average deal size. As far as financing goes, you're absolutely correct. I was actually on another podcast where the guy was surprised at how low the actual sales multiples are for online businesses versus, say, an offline business. And one of the big reasons is because of this pain point. Financing is just not in our industry. You know, if you go into Wells Fargo, like, hey, I want a $200,000 loan to buy this Amazon affiliate site, that bank is going to be like, what are you talking about? And get out of my office. Like, you are crazy.
Yeah. Just to put things into perspective, we look at the housing market, right? And, you know, people are buying houses that are, you know, maybe you know, five times what their yearly salary is or something like that. If there was no ability to get debt, there's no way the houses would be priced that high because no
one. For sure.
Right. So it's a similar concept here. Debt inherently creates a significant bubble effect on any asset class. And here you don't really have that option. So you're seeing things that are in real time.
So before we move on from the financing thing, I would like to mention there are some exciting things that are starting to happen in the space. For one, SBA loans. So Small Business Administration, if you're an American citizen looking to buy a online business, online businesses can qualify for SBA. And we've done a couple deals like that now. And those can be very attractive ways to do the business because they'll give you almost like the vast majority of the value of the business. They'll loan it to you, and it's a very agreeable rate if you want to go that route. Another thing is a thing I pull from real estate, from a lot of creative financiers who invest in real estate. A lot of that stuff that you learn in like commercial real estate or even residential real estate investing to do creative loans applies to our business too. So we have people, they'll go around their local communities, like local investor clubs, local entrepreneur clubs, even their local dentists, they'll like, you know, raise money from them. And they'll use that to help them structure the deal. In terms of more creative financing, if you're the buyer, the one skill set that can help you the most to get a good deal is understanding how to do deal structuring. So in our industry, if you ask for a seller finance business, say it was a $200,000 e-commerce store, you put down, I don't know, $150,000, and then the next $50,000 was an earnout, over 6 or 8 months. You ask that, the seller is most likely not going to charge you any interest. So they'll most likely you're going to get a 0% loan on that earnout right there. You still have to put a lot more down than say real estate, but there are a lot more creative wiggle room in our industry because even the sellers know that like, hey, financing's hard here. They want all cash, right? But they often understand that's not always going to be a possibility.
So again, let's go back then to the question of multiples. If I'm buying, I mean, do you have a range? From small business, smaller size, 20,000 business to the 3 million, you probably, as you go up in, you know, that cost of business, I presume that your return on investment or cash on cash, goes down considerably because of the increasing level of stability.
I want to say that's always the case, if I understand the question right. So like in the lower end of the market, like $20,000 to $30,000 businesses, their multiples are actually slightly inflated versus like bigger businesses, like or say like a seven-figure business. But they are also more risky too.
Multiples are inflated, meaning you're paying more for it?
Yeah, because there's less of them that are actually verified. Because if you go underneath the $50,000 mark, that's usually where most of the internet scams exist. Where they're like photoshopping the numbers, or you know, maybe they had their friends and families buying everything through their Amazon affiliate link to like play it up. So it becomes much more difficult for someone to play with numbers when you start getting above a certain range. And usually that's the $50,000 range.
Example, $100,000 site.
Yeah.
What range of sort of, cash on cash would you potentially be looking at in sites that would cost you about $100,000?
Yeah, so right around there, you're looking at EBITDA of like 2 to 3x. So we use monthly pricing, not annual pricing. So that's more like 23 to 38x of that monthly net profit.
So it's about, so that would be, if working backward for that, then you might expect to get your, if all things were equal, you might get your money back in your pocket in approximately 2 years.
Yeah. And if you understand what you're doing, you can do that much, much quicker. So one of the things that buyers have an advantage of, if they decide to learn a little bit about how internet marketing works, or even if they just hire someone that does, which is actually what I recommend because it's more leverage. So let's say you buy that content site, that $100,000 content site, and it's making about $5,000 a month. You do something called conversion rate optimization, which improves the actual user design of the place. And there's a bunch of companies you can go out and hire to do this for you. So if you're the more of the investor type, you can deploy a little bit extra capital and they can get it done for you. Typically only takes about a month. To set up the actual test only takes a very short time, but then you need to collect the data to make sure. And basically what that does is, say if I have 1,000 visitors coming to a single page and I'm converting 100 of those visitors to customers, and then I do conversion rate optimization or CRO. Now that same 1,000 visitors, I'm converting, let's say, 200 people to customers. Everything else is the same. And I've seen this, seen buyers do this when they buy these businesses, and they often get a 20% lift in their net profit just from this one small thing that doesn't take them much time, doesn't cost them much money to do. It's usually about $1,000, maybe $3,000 if you hire someone to do it for you. And they're seeing, like, on that $5,000 site, now that might be making $7,000 or $7,500. And in 6 months, the other thing that they can do is what we call a Flipper Fred model. So this is the same concept as buying a house that you have to do some restoration on. So you buy a house for a low price because it has some work you need to do, and then you go and flip it, right? Same concept. Well, so they...
And so I was curious about that as you were talking about it, because obviously the name of your business is Empire Flipper.
Yeah, it comes from the flippers. Yeah.
So the thought here potentially is that you're taking, you could be taking, you know, products, people are selling things. You could buy things and then improve them. And if you're good at improving them, you could go back and then sell for a higher. You know.
Exactly. Since I've been working with Empire Flippers for 3 years now. April will be 3 years, and I've seen the same business sold on our marketplace 4 times. And I saw this one business just recently. He bought it from us, and then he sold it with us literally like 10 minutes after he bought it from us, which was the craziest deal I've ever seen. But
he was like arbitrage. He was
He was like, "Hey, do you guys," he like sent in the money to us, and we were about to because we have a team called the migrations team that actually helps you like transfer all the technical assets over to the new owner and make sure everything is like good and good, like, you know, everything's hitting the right revenue marks, all that kind of stuff. And we were starting that process, and then he just asked us like, Did you guys have any other interested buyers? Like, I'd be, you know, interested in seeing what they say. And we just happened to have this one guy who came in too late to the deal who was wanted to buy it for significantly more. And it just worked out. Like, okay, I guess we're transferring it to this guy.
So he didn't even do anything to it. He just,
yeah. Now that's extremely exceptional, right? Don't think that's at all normal. That I've never seen that happen before.
What's a typical brokerage fee for this kind of thing? I mean, is it like real estate where it's sort of 5-6%?
So in our industry, it's a bit higher. So in our industry, the way our company works, we have a rolling commission structure. So anything that's less than $1 million, we do 15% on the successful sell. And then $1 million to 2 million is 12%, 2 to 5 million, it's 10%, and anything 5 million above is 8%.
And the seller's paying that, right?
That's right. The seller pays it. So that covers all the costs of what we're doing in terms of marketing the business, the, you know, the negotiations, the vetting, the migrations, all that good stuff.
One of the things that comes to mind for me is, you know, what else can you do besides flip? And the, you know, obviously, you mentioned a few things, which was, okay, well, maybe this is just one, you know, portfolio kind of thing that you can add that if you're even a little bit tech savvy, might not be that hard to do. Do you also see sometimes people using these sites to jumpstart other businesses that they have?
Absolutely. So that's actually a buyer persona of ours, just like Flipper Fred is. Yeah. So that one we call Strategic Sally. We have all these great names. So the Strategic Sally buyer, a good example of how that might work is, let's say they had a fitness e-commerce store, right? Selling jump ropes and a bunch of other fitness accessories. And then they buy a content site that's all about getting in shape. So now these two things, they can play off of each other, right? The e-commerce store can give some backlinks. The e-commerce audience can be used to turbocharge the content site's audience. But at the same time, the content site, when they have their best jump rope guides, you can put your product right there, right? The email list for that content site, you can send them over when you have deals on your e-commerce store. And if you started in another business, say a fitness coaching business, then you have the triumvirate there, right? All three of them are helping build on each other. And the coolest thing about Strategic Sally is if you're the seller that happens to get lucky to find a strategic acquirer like this person, they'll often pay you a lot more money than the average buyer. Because for them, they're seeing how this can, you know, amplify all their other assets. So they're often willing to pay a higher price to make sure they get the deal.
Got it. So let's talk about the site itself, your site. When you go there, and it's, I presume it's empireflippers.com.
That's correct, yeah.
that in the show notes as well. When you go there, can you literally, how does it work? I mean, is it like an MLS where I can search for businesses, and if I'm interested, I click on it, and then, you know, you guys kind of contact? How does that work?
Yeah, so MLS is a good analogy. So you go to our marketplace, so empireflippers.com/marketplace, and you'll see all of our current listings for sale there. And there's a few filtering options you can do, like based off monetization, based off price points. You know, there's a few different things you can do. And that's something we're going to be improving upon down the road with this new platform we're building. So the filtering options will be getting even better for buyers. But let's say you see a e-commerce store that you really like. You like the niche. And one thing we don't do is we don't give away the exact niche because we try to protect our sellers. So if it's a jump roping site, we might say fitness site, right? And if you're interested in learning more about that business, we show you the P&L. So you see the profit and loss, you see the traffic statements, you know, all that kind of stuff, and an overview of what the business actually is. But when it comes time to do your actual due diligence, there's two ways to get deeper information on that business. So you can either make a deposit. So a deposit is just a 5% refundable deposit. Even if you buy the business, we actually refund the money because we only accept bank wire as actual payment. So it's always refundable. And the reason why we have that set up is literally just to get rid of tire kickers and copycats, all that kind of stuff. Right. You'd be amazed at how few of them actually will make a deposit, even though we say it's refundable. Sure. But the other way that you can get more information on that business is by scheduling a call with our team of business analysts and tell them, hey, I'm interested in this listing. And usually if you're a new buyer, the business analyst will talk to you a bit before they show you the listing. They'll ask you some questions, understand your criteria and kind of really what your goals are, right? Like, what kind of buyer are you to make sure that this listing is actually correct? Because if you say like, hey, I'm interested in this software business, and then they start talking to you and you have zero coding knowledge, zero management knowledge, never even done anything in the online business space, our team might say, well, you might not want to buy that software business just yet. There's this other business that actually matches your criteria. So we'll consult you on that. But once you get the due diligence information from the business, we give you the domain so you can see the site, you can see everything about it. You can start asking any questions you want with us. We'll answer all of those questions. If you want to talk to the actual seller, we'll set up something called buyer-seller conference calls. And that's where our sales guy, he'll tell you as the buyer, like, hey, look, this is the seller. I'm going to bring him on. Here's some things you should know about the seller that might help you get a better deal. Just, you know, where the seller is coming from, what he wants. We coach the sell side too on who the buyer is that they're about to talk to, because we want everyone to walk away winning, you know, all three sides of us on this. From the buyer seller conference call, usually you can hash out the deal in more real time about, you know, deal structuring, earnouts, all that kind of stuff. Usually the deal isn't done just then, but usually happens shortly after a buyer-seller conference call.
Got it. So, and then for, as you mentioned, talking a little bit about, you know, what your interests are and stuff, do you you know, in the same way that a buyer's broker might, you know, kind of if say somebody's interested, but they don't really know like specifically the type of business and have, do you ever do like consultations with people and say, well, what are you interested in? What's your price point? And if something comes up, we contact you. Do you ever do things that way?
Oh yeah. All the time. So there's two caveats on that. One is that often when a buyer comes to us with a request like that, usually they're asking for such a specific business that it's unlikely we're ever going to get it. Like, hey, you know, I'm interested in flower pots made out of clay that is a e-commerce dropshipping model. Like, okay, we're never going to contact you. Most likely, it'd be like one in a million chances, like that very specific business comes across. But what we do recommend is what we call a criteria discovery call, which is goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where we really consult you on, well, what are your plans? What do you want to do? What are your current skill sets? Or what kind of skills are you wanting to acquire? You know, all that kind of stuff. And we'll create a framework for you, almost a due diligence framework for you, where we take over the first step for you. Like, hey, this hits 7 out of your 10 targets. I think you should give it a really good look, because the three points that don't hit your targets, I don't think you're going to care about that much because of X, Y, and Z, you know, things like that.
How long have you guys been in business?
So we've been officially Empire Flippers since 2011. We saw some meteoric growth in the last 3 years. We started off pretty small. We actually were initially just selling our own sites. And what happened was we were blogging about it, and a lot of people in our audience were like, hey, would you mind selling my site too? Because you guys have this audience, I'll pay you a commission. And that kind of what led us to here today.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. So again, the site is empireflippers.com. There's a book there as well.
So it's just a small little ebook. It's meant especially for people just getting started to explain the different business models that are out there. I can send you the Amazon link, or like I said, you can just go to our blog. It was originally just a series of blog posts, so you can also catch it there.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Greg, it was really good talking to you today, and thanks for coming on Wealth Formula Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Hopefully your audience learned a few things, and they can always reach out to me, by the way, just greg@empireflippers.com if you want to contact me.
Great. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. I have to tell you that I really enjoyed that interview, because I love the idea of online businesses. I've been tempted by buying them myself, may do so in the future. However, the important thing to remember, though, before you get into this, is that you really need to understand your own limitations and come up with some kind of strategy if you're going to do that. And I would recommend you talking to the broker about your own skill sets, et cetera, and, you know, anything like that before you get involved. You know, listen, if you're a tech person, for example, and can figure out how to improve conversion or search engine optimization, or you even understand what I'm talking about, it might be a no-brainer for you. But for those of you who are looking for a less hands-on approach, just be careful. You know, careful on the buy, especially. You know, consider partnering maybe with some more tech-savvy individuals who can improve your net operating income. I mean, this is an area where I do like the idea of flipping businesses, just because of the volatile nature of all of this, that if you can improve something and sell it quickly, it could be something that could be really exciting. The problem is that, you know, again, I assure you that it won't be fully hands-off. You'll at the very least need somebody else. You know, maybe it's your kids or somebody managing this and taking care of it. By the way, if anyone moves forward with buying a business like this, particularly from this group, let me know. I'd want to hear all about it. Shoot me an email, or leave me a voicemail. If you go to wealthformula.com, you can go to leave Buck a voicemail. And by the way, I would like to encourage you to go there and ask me some questions or leave me some comments, because we will be doing an Ask Buck show in the not so distant future. And I'd love to get your voice on the show. Also, while you're there at wealthformula.com, give me a 5-star review. There's a little button there you can click. It says, give us a 5-star review or something like that. Because that really helps keep up, you know, the quality of the show, exposure to others by getting us higher in the charts. And at the end of the day, helps us to really continue with getting high quality content and guests. So that's it for me this week. This is Buck Joffrey with Wealth Formula Podcast signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.